almost heaven, West Virginia.
There is actually an awful lot of people who go out of their way to comment on Cormac's videos where we have new voice, to express their support for him through his voice change and how willing and keen they are to continue to listen to him singing and to support him when he gets to his more adult voice stage.
In your case, I think a combination of talent and luck, and it's great.
Yeah, definitely.
You're taking your audience with you. But are we at the end of the journey yet?
No, definitely not. I think recently, definitely, we went to the studio in summer and recorded with my new changed voice. And we did a few tracks. One of them has been released, Country Roads. And I did some busking in Brighton as well.
Why did you do Country Roads?
Oh, funny story. So I got nominated for some music awards in Nashville, the Josie Music Awards. I went to Nashville for my awards, not expecting to win them. I got nominated for two, and I won one, which was the best one, which was the Vocalist of the Year, Young Vocalist of the Year, under 18. And yes, I was very happy for that. Very worthwhile trip. And we decided to do Country Roads as an appropriate song.
So this is Nashville?
For the occasion, yeah.
Yes.
So it was very much lots of country music. So in the Opry House, the Grand Ole Opry House, which is where the event was held, there was lots of cowboys and cowboy hats and boots.
Really?
It was really cool.
It was really brilliant. It was quite
some
funky,
fabulous
actually.
Dresses and everything. It was really good.
And some wonderful outfits and lots of sparkles and
fabulous performers.
And lots of southern accents.
Fabulous performers as
well. Well, Cormac, I'm not going to put a cowboy hat in for you.
No.
But I did like Country Roads.
Good.
I listened to it about 20 times when your mum first sent it to me.
Good.
I thought, I like this. This is good.
Yeah, Dominic's arrangements was very good as well.
It's a lot more upbeat and different, and I really, really like that.
But it suits your voice. Yeah. You've chosen your repertoire wisely. Yeah. I mean, if you were dead set on becoming an opera, a classical singer, you'd have longer to wait because with the bigger range you'd need and the more powerful notes from the chest, I don't mean chest voice, but Country Roads really suits your voice.
Good.
And maybe you've chosen repertoire wisely all along, actually.
Good.
Do you think so, Matthew?
Yeah, I would say so, yeah. Some of it has in some ways been done for you, in the sense that there is a sort of, whether we like this or not, a kind of legacy of treble singers who have somehow managed to find particularly the pop songs that seem to really resonate with people. And these are for all sorts of different reasons, but things like Run, I think just lyrically with the chorus light up with a little high voice and stuff like that, it just works for people.
Yeah.
May it be, again, that fantastical element that we kind of mentioned before. Yeah, or When the Cold of Winter, the In Dreams from Lord of the Rings as well, again, very popular with trebles and stuff. And so you've done well there's been research behind the scenes, hasn't there, to say, well, what works? What do people want to hear? And I think that's one thing I would like to just, again, touch on that we were talking about before as well, though. We don't want to shy away from the reality of you as a performer, and audiences. You know, a performer is made by their audience largely, and I think that is just such an important part of that treble transition.
Yeah,
because the audience is different, and you know, as we said several times, you're very fortunate and very skillful in the way that you've retained your audience. But people listen to treble for different reasons than they listen to a more mature voice.
Mm.
Some of that's just biological. People have built into them when they see whatever the technical things are. You can read up the science on all this, you know, big eyes and small mouth and proportions or whatever. They see a face and the instinct to care for that thing, to support that thing even, to look after that thing is really, really strong. So a lot of what's actually happening with the way that people are drawn to the treble, if you like, is purely biological.
It's a nurturing thing.
Nurturing, it's that nurturing
instinct. Oh, it is. Yeah. It's the nurturing. It is. It's the big eyes, the cute face. Of course, it's all of that, but it is also in the voice.
Yes.
The highest harmonic partials are the same as you get from a baby crying, and it's tuneful, but it brings out that nurture. And that's what you lose when your voice changes. There's really high, you know, harmonics and stuff. You've done that in science, haven't you? Those high partials, you lose them at voice change. And that's when the treble appeal begins to die.
Mm.
I mean, I think, just to go back to the point a while ago, that Albert Hall performance was the last live treble performance.
Yeah,
and he only just made it.
Good way to top off the treble career as well.
Yeah, I mean, it was great. I mean, did you enjoy that performance?
Oh, yeah, I really loved that. I remember being backstage with Dominic, and I remember, as soon as I got onto the stage, I was just like, you know what, let's just go for it. And I just went for it, and yeah, and it worked. Yeah.
Well, and well done.
And Dominic's got a video of me coming off stage. Well, I was like, coming off stage, I was like making a funny face. And then I showed my hands, and they were like physically trembling. But yeah, I really just, I love being on stage and performing to people and getting the reaction from people. It's just, I don't know, it just kind of like hits a place in my brain. It's just crazy. And I remember, every time I come off stage, I'm just like, I just want to get back on stage after.
Yet, when you're there, you're
To be fair, though, once I get into it, it's always the before that's there. But then I always, once it's the before bit, I always think about, oh, last time I was on stage was so good. And I'm like, yeah, let's just go out, enjoy it. And I think the main thing that I want to be able to do with my singing, which I'm definitely able to do at the moment, is just to enjoy it and to not worry about anything and all of the technical stuff and what other people think. It's just, in fact, I'm just like, no, I just want to enjoy it and just get out there.
Well, that's why it's good, Cormac.
Because
you do it from the heart and you want to enjoy it. Nevertheless, I want us just to think about that period from January 2023 to that performance you did once again for the good old Salvation Army. And the months in between, because this will be of interest, I'm sure, to other, you know, young singers, 12, 13, 14 years old. You just, during that period, which is the most exciting one for me, because I saw you a lot then and I did all sorts of measurements and I get excited, but it's not a great time for you. First of all, during that time, did your speaking voice ever do anything stupid like going high and low when you're shouting on the rugby field?
Yeah, definitely. It was round about January times when it started to go down a bit. And then it was only about... When did I do the Salvation Army one?
July.
It was only about, I'd say, June-ish. So my voice, round about May, April, June-ish is when my voice actually went down properly. And since about July, my voice hasn't really changed much. It's stayed about where it is now. So it's, you can kind of, the way I speak, sometimes, like some days, it's kind of sounds higher. But then I find when I come home, it goes deeper for some reason. I don't know why, but when I'm at school, it's just higher. I don't know, maybe it's because I'm more excited or something. Don't know why.
Oh, absolutely. Excited. Completely at school, normal, Cormac. I mean, you know, sometimes singing teachers, they do things like getting boys to count backwards from 20. That's a common thing to do, so they can see where their speaking voice is. But I mean, it matters enormously when you do that.
Yeah, exactly.
You do it at 5 o'clock in the morning, it's going to be there.
Yeah.
If you do it after you've just lost a football match, it's going to be there. It varies a lot, so you're absolutely right. But that period, that January to July, that was the high mutations.
Yeah, definitely.
Cooksey stage 2A, when you really can't sing, and you didn't. But I want you to tell us what it felt like when you went back on the stage for the Salvation Army in July. your new voice in public for the first time?
Well, I don't know really. I just kind of did it, yeah. Don't really think twice about these things, Martin, to be honest. This kind of happens, and then afterwards is when I kind of comprehend what happened. I remember when I introduced it all, I was like, this is my first time singing, since my voice has changed. But I remember the high notes on Close Every Door to me was, they were quite hard when I wasn't nervous, but I found that since my voice has changed, when you get the adrenaline, the high notes, they just seem a lot more smooth and buttery. And singing into a good mic helps as well, and it feels a lot nicer. But yeah, I think I actually prefer singing in my changed voice. Yeah, it's very fun. I much more prefer listening to my changed voice.
Well, I was asking you that a while ago, wasn't
yeah,
I?
I much more enjoy yeah. the mm. type of music that I'm singing now. Like, it's the type of music I'd listen to. Like some of the Ed Sheeran stuff and some of the country roads that I did. It's more of a type of genre that I'd actually listen to and enjoy. So that's why I feel like I can get much more across, because I can relate to it much more. But then the only downside with that is because I listen to the music, it's kind of like sometimes it feels like I'm replicating other artists, which isn't exactly a bad thing, but it's one thing that I was recognised for when I was a trebles. The fact I made it my own, now that I'm actually kind of realising it literally just in the moment now, is that because I didn't actually know the songs before and I didn't listen to them, so I kind of just sang them raw from what I wanted it to sound like rather than what I liked to hear from the recording. Yeah.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I mean, there can't be an artist anywhere in the world who isn't influenced no. by somebody else. Yeah. I mean, Bach nicked most of his music from other people.
Yeah.
He's still the greatest composer ever. that bit will probably be cut. But no, seriously, I think you describe what you're going through there as it's part of the maturation, isn't it? Not. Yeah. You know, realising what you're doing as much as anything.
Yeah.
But you are very much at home with that genre, aren't you?
Mm, definitely.
It is you.
Yeah, I think that's where I'd like to go into the future. More like a singer-songwriter kind of genre vibe-y type thing, yeah.
When did you become conscious that that was you?
I'm not sure, really.
Sort of evolved, hasn't it?
Yeah, it kind of just happened. There wasn't really like a declaration date where I just decided that that was what I wanted to do.
No, it wouldn't be, would it?
No.
It evolves, it comes yeah. upon you. Yeah.
I think getting my guitar maybe was a big help. Yeah, and I really do enjoy my guitar. At the moment, a lot more than my piano, which Mum isn't happy with, because I need to do my piano.
I don't mind. But, I just don't want your piano to fall by the wayside.
This past year, to be fair, my piano is just kind of, which it really shouldn't have. But sometimes it's good to take an artistic break from something.
It is, actually.
Yeah.
It is.
So it wasn't exactly the worst thing in the world to.
But then you
get
did
really
play
fresh,
Joker and the Queen. And
Yeah. So I have done lots of other things with my piano as well, but. In the grand scheme of things, standard-wise, my piano hasn't improved a single bit since now and last year.
No.
What would you say, yeah. Cormac, to a boy who is 13 years old and is at mid-voice 2A, which we've just said is when you can't really sing?
Yeah.
And he's in those 3 months between your January and your July. What would you say to him?
Just don't stress it, because you think that's what it's going to sound like, and it really isn't. I think I've said this in one of the videos that's gone on Instagram before. But don't stress it. It's going to be. It will eventually come out the end of the tunnel and sound okay, fingers crossed. It won't do it if you stress your voice and sing and try and you damage your voice by singing a lot. So, yeah, just take a bit of a break. Use it as an excuse not to do concerts and stuff.
Yeah, absolutely right. I mean, nature put the break there for you.
Yeah, exactly.
Really. And you've been lucky. It's been quick for you, like we talked about earlier.
Yeah.
But you're right. Very good advice to any 13-year-old from a 14-year-old.
Good.
I think the other thing on just on the songs that Cormac likes to sing, Cormac has always been involved in the discussions and in the songs that he has ultimately recorded. Typically, the process has been, here are some songs that we think would work well in your voice at this time. I think it's important to also say that what we've been very keen and have always tried to do is to make sure he's singing songs which we consider to be age appropriate, where he isn't then, you know, singing about my heart is broken and I feel so sad, because he was 12 and has never had a broken heart. So, you know, Empty Chairs is probably the closest that we came to something that he couldn't perhaps relate to.
Yeah.
And the songs that you've recorded in your treble voice are songs that you enjoyed singing, albeit that it's maybe songs that you wouldn't necessarily have listened to. You only got to look at the songs that you said on the album, for example, the second album.
When I was 12 and 11, when my treble, the stuff that I listened to, but I've not been able to sing. I wouldn't have wanted to have sang it. I don't really know why, to be honest.
Age appropriate, actually, is a whole topic on itself, isn't it? I mean, for choir boys, they're lucky. They just sing the Nunc Dimittis and the Magnificat, and that's all there is to it. But if you're singing songs that have non-liturgical lyrics, I remember recording with another boy, what was it? Blow the Wind Southerly, and it was about my lover at sea and everything. And I thought, oh, what do we do?
Yeah.
Very naffly, I think I changed the word lover to brother, and I'm thinking, oh, God, you made it even worse.
Really? Did you?
Well, yeah, my brother, come home to me or something. But it is a huge problem.
It's very important. It genuinely is. And there were so many people who would say, oh, sing this and sing that, and we're, no, sorry, that's not age appropriate. We wanted it to... It was that authenticity that we were was so important to Cormac as much as anything else.
Well, it reveals as well, though, doesn't it, like a difference of attitude. It strikes me that quite a lot of what you said, even when you're talking slightly glibly about, oh, I'm not doing as much piano, I'm doing more guitar, there's something about a transition from a classical to a less classical, maybe classical for crossover or maybe more poppy as well. And for a treble voice whose job it is to deliver that top G in that Nunc Dimittis or that Magnificat or whatever, and that's your job, you know, that's a very different experience from, okay, now you're the artist. What you say matters, what you think matters, what you sing matters. The words, the lyrics that you sing, people are going to be hearing you singing that rather than just hearing the choir boy singing that kind of as this eternal entity. I'm getting a bit weird, but you know what I mean? You know, it's a slightly different sort of situation.
It's ethereal.
Ethereal, yeah.
And I think that's the where Cormac not being a full-time chorister in a cathedral was to his advantage, because he wasn't singing in that higher register 5 days a week. He had the freedom to sing songs because he had the time to do that, which were non-choral, for want of a better
word. I think it's important to say, if he had been singing in that top register 5 days a week, he would have lasted longer.
Well, I agree, but that wasn't necessarily what we wanted.
It wasn't what you wanted.
Yeah. No. And I think from that point of view, you know, one of the things, when he did sing as a chorister, when he moved from being in just normal singing in the school to the cathedral, when he went back to his singing teacher after his first stint there, which was like half a term, his lower register had suffered as a result of going and singing in his higher register more regularly than what he already had done.
It's so fascinating to me, though, to hear all of us speaking in this topic, where almost without thinking about it, we speak about the classical tradition and the non-classical tradition as at war with each other. And it's so interesting to me that a treble is stuck in the middle of that tug of war quite often. I would have to ask, as a, you know, as somebody with a classical degree and an ex-choral scholar, Cormac, do you think the classical world as something you would ever return to? Obviously not yet, but what are, you know, you've expressed some feelings of like, okay, I've left that behind, I've moved on. Is that because of where you're at now, or has that world hurt you in a way that you feel I'm done with that? Or, you know, speak to us about that.
I don't know, really. I think not anytime soon I'd be moving back to classical type of genre. Potentially when I'm older, but I think it's just more, especially while you're at school, you don't really want to keep doing the classical stuff because it's not necessarily cool as singing as the other stuff. So I kind of feel obliged to do more poppy stuff. And I'm a lot more flexible now because a classical person would not be like, oh, I don't want to sing a pop song. And oh no, that's not. But a pop singer like me was, I feel like I'm a lot more flexible because I still sing classical stuff with my teacher at school. I just don't record it.
And well, you sang some Britain last
year. Yeah, no, exactly. I think that's important. You know,
yeah, and I think it's important not to completely abandon it, because where you'll find that most people's, lots of well-known pop stars do start off classically trained, and that's where the base of all the knowledge and all the technical techniques come from, and that's very important for a singer, and it's very important not to lose that, especially through the voice change.
This word pop,
It covers,
I hate the word,
I know,
classical, because classical is Haydn, Mozart, for heaven's sake. Now the same could be said about pop. Now can we be more precise, Cormac? What is your genre at the moment?
Singer-songwriter, I'd say, like pop ballads, more laid-back, popular music.
So it's not what was once called bubblegum pop or teeny bopper pop, is it? No, so I think we could do...
I think it's songs in the same style that he has sung. So, you know, something like, not necessarily classical crossover, but the two songs that are on the album really are, you know, a very good example. They're sort of those ballad, you know, beautiful songs where there's lots of emotion in them. Yeah. And it may only be one or two or three instruments. I think I would like him to be able to sing songs that maybe are a little bit more upbeat sometimes, because a lot of the songs by nature of treble singing have maybe been not as upbeat as they could be. And, you know, there's been some people have commented on YouTube where, you know, can't the child sing a happy song for a while, you know.
Oh, what about Lottie Crucifix?
You know, and of course, and it's not that it will be governed by what people say, it's what Cormac would like to sing. And it's trying to give him that flexibility to explore, you know, this is the best time in his whole life that he will ever get to explore.
I do have a slight niggle here, though. When we were talking about age appropriate a while ago, I was desperately trying to get the words John and Dowland in. Have you ever sung John Dowland?
No.
Who is that?
When you come and see me next, Cormac, we'll dig out Flow My Tears.
Must you?
Yes, it's a wonderful song. Another of my boys did it in his audition for Nikos, and he got in, and Christopher Bell was quite rude about the rhythm, I seem to recall, but he got in. No, my serious point is I think we do children and teenagers particularly a disservice if everything in their life has to be happy. Do they not feel other emotions? Tell us about that, Cormac.
Well, I guess, yeah, there's lots of emotions going around a teenager's head, lots of things going on, especially with a changing voice, because it's kind of like, am I going to sound good once my voice changes, or am I going to sound awful? And it's, I suppose it kind of can affect like your emotions in some way. It didn't especially affect me. I kind of just accepted the fact that it was either going to work or it wasn't.
It's not just, you know, changing voice, is it? It's changing relationships, maturing in your relationships with other people, discovering more who you are. It can't be joy every minute of the day, can it?
Yeah, exactly. But I think the comment on the YouTube about just about is because I just sang so many sad songs. I'm not necessarily a sad person. I'd like to think about quite a happy person.
You are a happy person. I can testify to that.
Yeah, good.
Yeah.
So I think that was more of the point that they were trying to get across. And I literally 85% of the songs that I've done are about loss or like some sort of melancholic topic.
Which is to his credit, because
yeah, because that's I sing those. Yeah. Those are easier songs to sing. In my opinion, I'm quite enjoyed getting the emotion across and being very passionate about topics that I can't really relate to.
Well, just
adapt them to
hear me. A young man, a very young man, you know, demonstrating musical prowess and emotional intelligence is quite a, you know, engaging combination. Particularly at this time, you know, this is all the rage that, you know, boys and young men, they don't have enough emotional intelligence, and, you know, there's all sorts of campaigns about that and, you know, how to sort of combat that.
So. Yeah, I think you put that very well, Matthew. I mean, emotional intelligence is the word, and boys and young men being unable to manage their emotions is not a topic to be dismissed lightly.
Yeah.
And, I mean, there's somebody, I forget who wrote a book about this, and they were talking about emotional leakiness and young men try to avoid it because it's part of being macho.
Yeah.
But that's their downfall.
Yeah.
I mean, the fact you can do it, I mean, we're back to empty chairs at empty tables. It was brilliant. It was brilliant, Cormac.
Thank you.
But it was.
Millions of people seemed to
think so. Millions of people did, exactly. But, I mean, obviously we changed the video aspect too, you know, that we repositioned the theme of the song to fit with the times of the pandemic, and I think that has also resonated with people. It didn't necessarily resonate with them particularly at the time when we first released it in January 2022, but it has absolutely resonated now as further down the line. But, you know, and obviously we've put that on the album because, you know, why wouldn't we have put Empty Chairs on the album? It's the main track, really. And I'm really excited to actually listen to Empty Chairs on a CD because you lose so much sound quality through streaming music. And the actual sound on a CD with, you know, decent speakers, if you're fortunate enough to have them, or headphones or whichever your preference is, I think is going to be incredible.
Well, let me touch on that very briefly, because I think this is somewhere that Cormac can be a bit of a role model in a lot of the research and a lot of the, you know, pressure that's put on educators and so on. It's like children are, and young people are dealing with this post-traumatic stress basically from the pandemic and a world that completely changed, and as they often see it, you know, an adult that abandoned them really and said, well, you have to just stay in your room and not see any of your friends and so on and so forth. Not to get into any of the politics of that, but just to say that, you know, I don't think anyone would deny there's a huge amount of latent stress and confusion surrounding that period that everybody lived through. And it this word emotional intelligence is often what's used, you know, that they there's a lot of children and young people who don't know or don't feel it's appropriate to express how they feel. And I just think seeing when Cormac sings, when you see him perform, I just think it's such a amazing visual and auditory example of that. You know, like, this is what it looks like to be able to express yourself, and B, it's a pretty awesome thing to be able to do. Yeah. And it's just one step removed from, okay, I'm now going to talk about my stress and my trauma from the pandemic, but it's actually something that's really relevant, because when you see a young person doing that and it's in a way that can be admired and celebrated, then, you know, that can be a catalyst for all sorts of other really healthy conversations to come from it.
How does that feel from your perspective, Cormac? Because you were really quite fortunate in the pandemic again. You know, you've had some incredible luck over the last few years.
Yeah, definitely.
But I think from that point of view, as Matthew says, that whole... It's it's something that I don't ever really see you preparing. You know, you don't massively prepare before you go on stage. You don't massively, you know, practice, or, you know, arguably we try to get you to prepare a little bit more, but, you know, that's us as grown-ups panicking that, you know, for the one time that you won't just pull it out of the bag. But so far, you always manage to pull it out of the bag. And, you know, what does that feel like from a... If you were to over-prepare, do you think that would be an issue for you?
I don't really want to, like... I don't like being sick of a song when I perform it.
Agreed.
And I feel like if you over-practice something when you already know it, there's a phrase... practice until you can get it right, and then there's practice until you can't get it wrong. And I feel like once you get to the point where you can't get it wrong, there's not really any point of keep doing it. You obviously refresh yourself. And I think it's always very good to say, if you've got a concert in the evening, you have to at least once, some point during the day, run it through. You don't want to just straight away go in, yeah.
I think Matthew, you're very wise, Cormac. You've reminded me of the worst performance of my life when I was a young organist. It was in Canterbury Cathedral, and it was a big occasion, and I over-practiced, and I've never played so badly. You're absolutely right.
Mm.
Wow.
There is a happy medium, though, Martin.
Oh, yes, I just like to point that
out. You have to sing it a few times.
Yeah, no, No, but I think Cormac speaks wisely here. I'm sticking up for him. Yeah.
No, I completely agree. This is the point. This, you know, as his parents, this is something that we have had to learn to trust, because he, at the end of the day, is the person that is going on the stage, not us. And it's whilst we think, and we're not musicians, we don't go on stage, we don't sing. So heaven forbid, that would be a dreadful idea. But from that perspective, it's what works for each person individually. And it's Cormac having the sort of strength of character, really, to say, no, I'm not going to sing that 10 times today. Because then, you know, whilst we think that it might be a good idea, it clearly would lose some of that emotion that he is able to put into things. But I think it's overall musicality. Is that the right word? I'm not really very...
Yeah, well, I mean, I joked earlier about, you know, Cormac's artistic temperament and how that accounts for all sorts of things, but I think there is some truth in that as well, that there's always going to be this tension between what we can control, let's call it control, you know, control and chaos, and creativity lives in between. You know, so if you've got an amazing concert pianist, I mean, you know, they have practiced, like, you know, for hours, they've got that all memorized. But the performance, the uniqueness of every time that they play it, the thing that gives it the emotion, that no matter how much you practiced, if you were able to play those same notes, you would never sound like that pianist. Yeah. That's the chaos, you know. Yeah. That's the other part, and the creativity is being able to sort of be right in that, in the middle. And I think, you know, again, defending Cormac, because that's my job, but sometimes it's the artist who knows when they're being pushed in one direction or the other. More likely, they're going to complain about it more when they're pushed in the, you know, too far in the practice direction. But there's a sort of visceral reaction to that, I think, sometimes as an artist. You sort of, when you feel that something is being too constrained, or you feel it's being framed in a way that's just not right. I mean, you spoke about the appropriateness of lyrics, for example. That's another example. It's like, how can I express this if I don't understand what it's saying, if it doesn't resonate with me? All these things, there could be all sorts of areas. But, you know, the great artists know how to live in that scary place between control and chaos. Mm.
Yeah.
And I get that. And that's something that he needs to be allowed to keep, and that we need to allow him to keep it.
And sometimes it's bitter experience. Sometimes it's like, okay, I was far too much in the chaos.
Yeah, exactly. When you stand up and you don't remember
your
words. But
then you
know
for next time, you know.
Yeah, and that is the thing. So, Cormac, I think we are genuinely going to get to the end now. I think... Is there anything that you feel that there's worth mentioning again from your perspective, particularly on the encouragement for boys who are about to, or will at some point, or in this stage where they don't want anyone to hear them sing.
Well, I think that in that is it mid-voice two.
Mid-voice 2A.
Mid-voice 2A. Stage 3. Where your voice does just generally sound not the best, and even yourself can recognise that, is that just generally just don't stress it. And after you do get to where you can sing, it's just to make sure you're enjoying yourself and to just not feel like that you're not like, it's not natural. If something doesn't feel right, then find something that makes you feel like it is good and that you can enjoy it. And if you're enjoying it, then if other people see you enjoying it, then hopefully they will enjoy it. So, and if they don't, then yeah.
That's part of being the performer, the artist. That's why people like going to performances and listening to people.
Yeah.
And
it, got it does go back to that,
that point earlier that Matthew was making, I think is so important, that we need more people like you, Cormac, especially young men and boys, to show that it is all right to perform, that you can handle your emotions through art and song. That's why we did Boys Keep Singing back in the early, 2005, to try and get more of it. And we just keep trying. And we need people like you, because you're good.
Yeah, because that's just something else that the pandemic did scupper, isn't it? You know, young people in general being able to perform, being involved in music. And, you know, choirs have been hit. There's less people singing, particularly younger people, because, you know, so many choirs have disappeared as a result of that, and it's about trying to claw all that back.
And Cormac, can I just add, because people will forget this, that you have helped other people by working with me so I can get information, because we never finish learning. And what I write in my books, I wouldn't be able to write without you and other boys who've gone before you. And I don't want that overlooked.
Good.
I think that is quite a contribution.
Well, it's my pleasure, Martin. Good.
Yeah. And you've helped me as well a lot, Cormac.
Good, thank you.
Ways you probably don't understand. When you get to my age, you'll start to realise that the kind of mess and chaos of your life, when you start being able to live that vicariously through other people, it starts to make sense a little bit more, and you get a little bit of closure. And, you know, all the kind of bits and pieces that you did that you just sort of left unfinished, you know, they start to kind of come together a bit more. So just being able to be part of your journey, just for me personally, has just been amazing, as well as an honour, because whatever else happens with your career, everybody agrees you are a very, very competent and extraordinary musician. So just being around you is just always fun, always cool.
Thank you very much, Matthew.
Brilliant. Well, just from our family's perspective, you know, I think what I would like to do is just add how much the support of the people who listen to Cormac means to us. The time that they take to comment on his videos, the time that they take to listen to his songs and to enjoy them, and if they have, then to actually tell us that they've enjoyed them, you know, that is always really, really encouraging for all of us in relation to that. And we find it very, very motivating with regards to what it is that we want to do next, really. You know, we don't know what next is going to look like. We've got the CD. I think I might have mentioned that already. You know, this is Cormac's second album. It's called A Borrowed Gift, and it is a selection of his favourite treble releases that were recorded previously. And then there are two new tracks in his brand new voice as well, which we hope that you will enjoy and inspire you to keep following this journey, whatever on earth that's going to look like next.
There's a grief that can't be spoken. There's a pain that goes on and on.
And that's actually it from Matthew and I. This third episode brings our contribution to an end. I'd like to say a very, very big thank you to Matthew, not just for taking part, but for doing a brilliant job with all the editing as well. We have both really enjoyed being guests on Cormac's podcast, and I'm delighted to say that next week Cormac and Martin will be joined by two young men who wear boy trebles just a little bit longer ago than Cormac was, and their names are Max and Robbie.
Max is 21. He has featured a great deal in Martin's research over the last 10 years or so. And 18-year-old Robbie still sings at Carlisle Cathedral, but he is hoping to take up his offer to be a choral scholar at a top UK university in September. Thank you very, very much to everybody for listening, and I do hope that you can join Cormac and Martin and Max and Robbie next week for more voice-changing chats and insights.
Spoken, there's a pain goes on.